Good evening, everyone. Thanks so much for being here with us again on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. This is Ebony's Bones. I'm your host, Ebony Johnson, alongside our co-host, Professor AJ Lowe.
Hello.
And we're excited today. We have the conversation is about African psychology and a pre-colonized mindset. And we have joining us on the phone from the West Coast, Dr. Mutor Flood, who is a professor of psychology and specifically studies African psychology. So he's going to break it down for us, and we're going to get into this conversation about what we believed before we were colonized and really see the ways that our lifestyles and our shifts have changed based on colonization. Thanks so much for being with us, Dr. Flood.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. So I want you to just jump right in and tell us what it actually is, African psychology, and then we'll go from there.
Okay, so pretty much African-centered psychology, to differentiate it from African psychology, let's take it in two parts. So psychology. So in standard normal psychology, psychology means, the ology means the study of, and psycho means the mind. So a standard definition would be psychology is the study of the mind and behaviors of humans as individuals and how they operate as individuals in groups. Well, if you then go a little bit further, in studying what psychology, where the name psychology comes from, it becomes more interesting. So the term psycho or psyche comes from a Greek goddess. But the term for the Greek goddess comes from an Egyptian term called sakhu in ancient Egyptian or Kemetic. And that word means the understanding, the illuminator, the eye of the soul of the being, that which inspires. And the k part means she. So roughly, African-centered psychology means the study of the soul. As far as it's concerned to, African-centered psychologists. And that's really a really good way to explain it, because that kind of centers the discussion on kind of what African-centered psychology is about.
Mm-hmm. Many of us have said that, I mean, I personally feel, and I think you can tell, regardless to what people believe or if they have a religion or not, if they consider themselves atheist, spiritual, what have you, as a people, I feel we're very spiritual. Is that a part of our inherent nature, as far as history has shown?
Yes, there are some, it's a great question, by the way. There's some core kind of African personality traits. So I want to preface this by saying Africa is not a monolith. There are there's a variety of cultures, a variety of people. Now, that is, I want to say that's at the surface level. So obviously, people in Afro-Cubans in Cuba are not going to be the same as the Hausa in Africa as far as obvious behavioral cultural traditions and traits. There's going to be some differences there. But when you get to a deeper level,
Dr. Flood? If you're still there, Dr. Flood, we're not able to hear you. Something, I'm not sure if something happened with your phone line. We'll give you a second and see if you chime back in. But Dr. Flood? Okay. Whoops. Maybe he's going to call back.
I have some questions on how that, like those psychologies are going to change once Black people start being introduced into a predominantly white culture that's dictated and governed by white supremacy.
Dr. Flood, are you back with us? Dr. Flood, we have you through. I don't know if you're not able to hear us. We can't hear you, but we do have you on. But hopefully
you'll be able to.
Aw. Okay, Dr. Flood, give us a call back. I'm not sure what's going on. Everything looks okay on this side, but
maybe they're having solar flares on the West Coast.
On the West Coast. Listen at you. But Professor Lowe, just in your studies on history, and did you ever tap some into African psychology as you were getting your master's in?
So when we talked about psychology, that was primarily in my undergraduate levels, mm-hmm. because the focus for my graduate studies was primarily on history, mm-hmm. and I'm not a psychologist, so
yeah.
on some level I can't, you know, it's out of my field of study, and you know how I feel about venturing out of my field of study.
Yeah.
But I was privy to be able to read some of those African psychology books, namely like Francis Cress Welsing or like Neely Fuller Jr. I really appreciate that guy in his analysis of what it is to be affected by white supremacy. How he talks about black people being victims of white supremacy.
Hello?
Oh, he's
okay,
back.
Okay, great. Dr. Flood, you're back with us. Good.
Okay.
I don't know what happened, but I was like, darn, I hope. And Professor Lowe is saying maybe they were having some, I don't know.
Solar flares
on the West Coast. But stop the solar flares. We want to hear this. So, wait, where do we leave off? You were saying that Africa, understanding, you know, Africa is not a monolith and, you know, they're different. Area.
Right.
It's something I do want to stress too. Like sometimes we just say Africa and we don't realize that there are like what 54, 56 countries within the continent of Africa. Countries.
Yeah.
You know,
countries.
So, but anyway, you were talking about just the spirituality and that it, I asked you about that being our nature as a people.
Yes. And so, what we've seen, when African-centered psychologists have done a number of studies for the past 30, 40, well, almost 50 years, is that although there are many different cultures of Africans on the mainland and throughout the diaspora, we tend to find certain personality, certain behavioral traits in common with all of these, whether they're in Tanzania or they're in, you know, Cuba or Brazil, you know, or in Australia. And one is a deep sense of a spirituality. That's a core, a kind of a core kind of component of the African conceptions of, you know, kind of reality. Now, that could be, you know, a more traditional spiritual practices, or it could be, you know, one of the Abrahamic religions. But whatever it is, anywhere you find Africans, you generally find a very high level of spirituality. And there are a number of other traits, personality and behavioral traits, that Africans all around the world in general have.
Do you believe that I was looking at something the other day, and the question was about whether or not black people in America, African Americans, use spirituality as a scapegoat. And, you know, it may be that, or I don't know if they said a scapegoat or just something to the degree that maybe we attempt to use our spirituality too much and we're not able to be in the material world, you know, as well in this country, because maybe we can be over spiritualized sometimes. Do you see our struggles with our innate spirituality being in conflict with us being in the United States and with colonization?
Yeah, go ahead, because I want to follow up with that. Go ahead. Knock that one out, and then I'm gonna come back with something.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I would say that. The way Africans think, it's diunital. So we have a spiritual component and we have an analytical component. We normally, when we think or process information, we combine those two. We combine the cognitive, the thoughts, the spirituality. We also combine the affective states, so the emotional states, into how we process and view the world. So I would say that having that synergistic kind of quality wouldn't be a bad thing. Now, to answer your question more specifically, do African people, more specifically talking about African Americans right now, do we overly rely on religion? I would say probably so, but that has more to do not with a dysfunction of the African personality, but of the process of colonialization and enslavement and, you know, just being marginalized as African people, where the church has been sort of a main refuge for African peoples to congregate, to organize, to help out with affairs traditionally in the African American community.
Now, I guess my question would that be a contemporary dysfunctionality right now? Like in contemporary America, would a black people's, I would call it an addiction to religion, would that be dysfunctional for our survival in the United States?
Well, it depends on whose lens you're looking at. I would never say that spirituality is a dysfunction, mostly because that would go against what I know about African people, that's a core part of who we are. Now, if you say that we're relying on that and not being analytical, that has ramifications that are outside of what our personality is. That has to do with, you know, education, media systems, and a whole host of other things that influence those particular traits. So it's not that African people can't think more analytically. It has a lot more to do with how the world at large trains and socialize African people.
Could you speak to Dr. Neely Fuller, please? I was talking about that when you got disconnected. He's a psychologist, correct? Correct?
He's not. But he's definitely an African centered theorist. Not a psychologist, but definitely one that a lot of the African centered theorists respect for his very insightful views on the system of white supremacy, racism.
Can you enlighten us on those views, please?
Yeah, sure. So Nellie Fuller Jr., I like to put him in the, I like to put theories on white supremacy, racism into different categories. And he would fall into the psychodynamic theories of racism. And that's because his theory has to do with psychodynamics, mostly based off Sigmund Freud. And so what he proposed is that he claimed that white supremacy racism is a compensatory system. Compensatory is a defense mechanism, meaning to compensate, you know, to make up for a lack of something. So we claim that white supremacy racism is a compensatory system, a whole system created due to a lack of something, created by those who classify themselves as white over people who are classified as non-white. Those who classify themselves as white carry this system out through their thoughts, their speech, their actions, in all nine major areas of human activity. He believed that, you know, white supremacy is the only true racism in existence because it is functional and operational above all others. This theory was one of the first to explain, you know, white supremacy as a global system and equate it to white supremacy. Later theorists on the subject would use his work and then add to it.
I do want to let people know that if you've just tuned in and just joined us, this is Ebony's Bones. I'm your host, Ebony Johnson, alongside co-host Professor A.J. Lowe. And today our show is about African psychology, a pre-colonized mindset. We have the pleasure of having Dr. Mutor Flood, professor of psychology, who distinctly specializes in the study of African psychology, on the phone with us from the West Coast as our guest for the hour. If you have questions or comments, we invite you to call in. Ronkia Bates is on the other side of the glass. She's got some fly new hair, y'all, today. Yes. The number is 816-931-5534. Again, that's 816-931-5534. Go ahead, Professor.
No, I just wanted him, I wanted Dr. Mutor, because I'm trying to understand, Dr. Flood, I wanted to ask you, like, what would be wrong with Dr. Fuller's analysis, especially because it seems so spot on. It seems so exact as far as how Black people are reacting to white supremacy and the idea that white supremacy is only the truest form, or the only true form of racism. Like, explain where he's getting it wrong.
I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say he's getting it wrong. What I would say is that the people who came after him, who added on to what he was kind of gearing towards or saying, I think they added on to it in a way that makes it a more of an explanatory theory. And so the best one who kind of added on to it, the most known, is Dr. Frances Cress Welsing. And she, you know, a Howard grad, has, a practicing medical doctor. She's a psychiatrist. Rest in power. She passed away a couple of years ago. She added on to it in a way that made it more potent. Because, like I said earlier, in his theory, he said, Nellie Fuller Jr. said that, you know, white supremacy racism is a compensatory system. So it's compensating for something. But he didn't kind of explicitly state what that was. Whereas when Dr. Frances Cress Welsing came in to the picture, she kind of laid it all out on what they were compensating for, what they lacked that they made a whole system for. And what she kind of said was that, hey, so she said that whiteness is a genetic inadequacy, or a relative genetic deficiency state. So based upon the genetic inability to produce the skin pigments of melanin, which is responsible for skin color. So when white folks circumnavigated the globe and started conquering, you know, the world, they found that the vast majority of the world's people have color, which suggests that color is normal for human beings, and color absence is abnormal. Whiteness is also genetically recessive to the dominant genetic factor of color production. This is her theory back when she was doing it in the 70s. Some of this stuff is not as accurate with new information. But the point that she's getting at, I agree with. So in her conception, color always annihilates, phenotypically and genetically speaking, the non-color white. So Black people, we possess the greatest color potential, with brown, red, and yellow peoples, her words, not mine, because I don't consider people brown, red, and yellow, possessing lesser quantities, respectively. This is the genetic and psychological basis for the Cress theory of color confrontation and racism. So basically, white people created a system of white supremacy because they saw that they're genetically in the minority, and that if they started to procreate with other colored people, then they soon would not exist. All right, so they were a genetic minority and a numerical minority as well. Most of the world, 9/10 of the world, are colored people. And only that 1/10 white folks, they have limited amounts of melanin.
Dr.
And
Flood, go ahead.
Yes.
No, go ahead. No, finish your thought. Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I want you to finish your thought, and after that we need to take a break, but I have a question for you that I'm going to leave before the break, but I want you to complete that, the rest of your thought.
Yeah, sure. So this psychological response, creating the system, whether conscious or unconscious, revealed an inadequacy based on the most obvious and fundamental part of their being, their external appearance. So whites defensively developed an uncontrollable sense of hostility and aggression, along with a compensatory system of white supremacy racism. So they fear being genetically eliminated by non-white people due to their genetic and numerical minority in the world. And this attitude has continued to manifest itself throughout, you know, the history of mass confrontations between whites and people of color. And this aggression has been the greatest with black people because blacks have the most melanin. And that's kind of basically her theory.
Thank you for that. When we come back from the break, I know Professor Lowe has something as well that he wants to share. But Dr. Flood, the thing about it is, when I hear that that people who believe themselves to be white are actually in the minority, what I want to know is, in our psychology, then how is it that they came to dominate us? And we're going to take a break here on Ebony's Bones, and we'll be back after these messages. We're talking to Dr. Mutor Flood about African psychology, a pre-colonized mindset. He is a professor of psychology and has taught at different colleges and universities, and we're glad that he's joining us from the West Coast this evening. We'll be back after these messages. All right, and we're back here on 90.1 FM on Ebony's Bones with Dr. Mutor Flood. So, Dr. Flood, how is it that, I mean, I do understand that life, you know, the rest of nature, there are seasons and cycles, and, you know, and if you look at empires and just all throughout history, nobody just reigns forever, you know? However, how is it that our psychology as a people was so overtaken by a group that is actually in the minority, and we came to believe ourselves as a minority? Like, what happened?
And that's a great question. So there's a couple of different theories, and I'm kind of going to run maybe quickly through them. So one is that the sole reason why people consider themselves white control the world is due to their excessive aggression. So because they want it and they're completely aggressive and they'll stop at nothing to get it, that is why they control the world currently. A great anthropologist, Dr. Marimba Ani, she isolated and kind of explained what the core cultural imperative of Europeans are, and that's power. You know, and when she says power, that's not power to do things, which everyone needs power to do things. It means power over others, that those others could be other humans, it could be other animals, it could be over nature, but not only power over, but control. So their overriding cultural imperative is to control, is to have power over something. That could be over as a white man over their woman. That could be adults over children, you know, humans over nature. But that kind of thinking would have led them to dominate the entire world in a terroristic fashion, because that aggression, you know, just kind of blanketed the world with terror and enslavement and colonization and genocide. And so the second part of that is that they had the means. Now, in the 14th century, there were a number of countries who could have done with Europe did, most notably China. China had pretty much the same setup as Europe did in the 14th century, but the Chinese don't have that cultural imperative of wanting to control and have power over other people. And so along with the guns that they got from China, which created guns, Europeans also, because of trade, had a bit more immunity to different and varied diseases. They also had better technology. And so they were able to use this and go around the world, and because of their inherent aggression, just take over everything. But that's quite recent. I mean, you know, humans have been around, like, as Homo sapiens sapiens, about like 100,000 years, maybe more. And so we're talking about the last 500 years with European dominance. And like you said, you know, cultures are, you know, epics are seasons, you know, and honestly, how the world is looking right now, the European season may be over. We're at the precipice of collapse.
Okay, I got a question for you then. What would you say some of the major mental illnesses are with Black Americans right now?
Some of the major mental illnesses of Blacks is what I would consider to be cultural misorientation. So, yeah, African people want to be everything but African. They want to be 1/100th Native American. They want to do anything that takes them away from being African, because society has socialized us to believe that African is negative, because we live in a European dominated society. So we try to, you know, fix our nose, to look, you know, more like an Indo-European nose. We try to lay our hair down with perms that are carcinogenic, because we want to fit in and conform to a large extent. Everything that we see on TV kind of gears us towards, you know, Eurocentric ideals of beauty, and Eurocentric ideals of what intelligence is, of what it means to be human. So anything that's outside of that spectrum, you know, of Europeanness is othered. And so Africans don't want to be othered, and so they run away from their Africanness.
Go ahead. I want you to finish.
But the Africanness is never going away. It's a core part of who they are.
Okay. Is that all? Is that the only one? Is that the only mental illness?
I mean, there's other subcomponents of it, but that's the main one. Is that our loss of culture? All right, our loss of culture, and our loss of connection to not only each other, but the world, because in the African conception, everything's interconnected. So that core component is missing. And until we get back our culture and define reality on our terms, because right now reality is defined by a different culture, one that's actively oppressing us. So once we take back that power and define our reality based off our ideas about the world, then it's going to be nearly impossible for us to reach a level of normalcy, mentally speaking.
Dr. Fallon, I'm glad that you brought that up, because as far as, you know, us believing that, and well, not even just believing, for me, just factually observing and realizing that everything is interconnected. One of the questions that I have is our lifestyle and what we were accustomed to when we were in alignment more with our culture, as you're referring to, and who we really are as a people and as beings. Because I did an interview a couple of years back with some young women from Kenya, and they talked about, they had been in the U.S., I think it was, well, I don't know, around 5-8 years, and they talked about some things that they miss. And one of the things that they talked about was just how they just socialized more. You know, they would have, by breakfast time, several people have come over just to visit, and, you know, and by, like, people, you know what I'm, like, work wasn't the center, is one of the things that I'm getting at, as it is in the, you know, in the United States and then elsewhere too, but like making work the center of your life, of our lives, and making it seem as though, oh, well, you just need to work, and that's what's praised, but then your relationships to yourself and to your family and other people fall apart because you really can't sustain. I mean, I don't see how it's evident to me that we're having so much problems with our relationships in the rest of our lives because we're trying to center it, everything around working.
Well, I mean, that's the American economy, though. Like, I think that's what we're noticing out of COVID is that right now our American culture is messed up because we care more about making money. Especially in regards to, like, on a macro level, talking about the economy, and on a micro level, talking about feeding your family, is more about making money right now than it is about a global pandemic that is actually killing people.
I would agree with that. However, if you want to look back at it, and I know Professor Lowe and yourself know this pretty well, you know, capitalism is an invention of Europeans, largely. I mean, there were some signs of pre-capitalism in parts of Africa, but more or less the fundamental operating kind of capitalist system comes out of Italy in the 1350s and matures after industrialization in the 1800s.
Yeah, Walter Rodney, he explains in his book How Europe Underdeveloped Africa, he said the capitalism, raw capitalism, comes out of slavery.
That as well. And he did that's an excellent book, which I hope everyone should read. And he kind of goes over in detail just how that occurred. And so, you know, capitalism and the enslavement, which in the African centered theory is called the Maafa, the great disaster, they come together at almost the same time. And a lot of theorists believe that racism is connected to that enslavement, and not that racism is connected to the personality traits of Europeans.
Okay, so I had a question about when you talked about Africans not really wanting to be African anymore, and based off of the social unrest that I would attribute a lot again to COVID-19, that brings a lot of attention, because without COVID, then we wouldn't have the whole country settling down. You understand that when people were burning down police stations, that was at the same time that they were supposed to be having the NBA finals. So if COVID wasn't around, I really don't believe that we would be having this type of social unrest or even this reckoning that's happening. But my question is, do you think that that is changing, this identity crisis that black people are still having? Do you think on a psychological level that it can be changing as far as Africans starting to accept, or black people starting to accept, that they're African?
I'm optimistically hopeful. However, I understand that these things come in waves. So we could look through many different eras of our experience in America as black people and see that there were highs of when we overtly expressed our Africanness. However, without the development of institutions and structures to kind of reinforce Africanness, so schools, businesses, the whole social system needs to be worked out in a way that reifies and reconnects us with our Africanness, because some of the more profound problems that Africans face right now is that Africans in America, so my Africans in America right now, that we don't trust each other. We don't have trust. We're not motivated to work with each other. We don't have a collective sense of self for things that would actually enrich us as African people. And that's not by accident. The European model does a great job in incentivizing us to in one way, be connected with each other, as long as it doesn't negatively affect them. So they can own basketball teams, but we as a group can view 99% of African people playing basketball. That doesn't really hurt the bottom line of the owners, so that's fine. So again, in order to make this a lasting effect, we need Africans to create structures, institutions, businesses, essentially a nation within a nation, in order for these gains not to dissipate in the wind.
Dr. Flood, can you? I want to let people know you are feel free to call in with questions for Dr. Flood. He is a professor of psychology with a distinct study in African psychology, and you can call in and ask questions or comment at 816-931-5534. Again, 816-931-5534. Dr. Flood, I want you to, if you can, describe or explain a little bit more, what does it mean for us to return to our Africanness? Like, how do we view ourselves? I know you said that we knew everything was connected, but for instance, if for me to really reconnect with my Africanness, that would mean what?
Well, it would mean a lot of things. It would mean, you know, just being comfortable with who you are. So I guess a better way to answer this would be to talk about, like, what is the African worldview? So the African worldview is comprised of a couple of different things. It's comprised of cosmology, epistemology, axiology, and ontology. Those are big words, but I kind of explain it. So cosmology, it means the structure of reality from a particular racial, cultural perspective. The African cosmology is that we are interdependent. We are collective, and we have an orientation to human nature, oneness, and unity. Our epistemology, or the way that we understand reality based on our racial and cultural experience, is that we understand reality through an effective cognitive synthesis, what I talked about a little bit earlier. So we have the emotional side, and we have the mental analytical side, and those come together in a synthesis to help us understand reality. And then we have our value system, or our axiology. Our value system tends to be, you know, person to person, human to human relations, whereas other axiologies, such as like European, is person to object or human to object relations. And so objectification means the action of degrading someone to the status of a mere object, and that's kind of what Europeans do. Whereas Africans are, we see you as a human, not as a thing outside of us.
Material, the high level of materialism. Like, I've got to get all of these things in order to be valuable.
No, that's deep. I never thought about it.
No, it's directly connected to that materialistic orientation, where everything is kind of othered. I just need things because having lots of things gives me a sense of self. And that's a large component to the kind of European psychology.
I got a question.
Sure.
Okay, so could you speak to the possible psychological damaging that might go on to a child that might, let's say, let me ask you,
Dr. Flood, were you finished? I want to make sure you got through. Yeah, but we'll take that question after you finish the different segments that you were talking. I want you to wrap that so we can get all of them.
Finish that.
And then we'll go to this. Okay.
My bad.
I want to know, and the listeners could be like, hey, wait, finish
the other one. My bad. Sorry, I dropped the gun.
So the last part that makes up the African worldview is ontology. And that is the essence or the essential nature of reality from a particular racial and cultural perspective. So the African ontology is everything is spirit. Everything has a vital force. Everything is connected through spirit. And that's that oneness that connects all of us to a higher power, to the universe, to existence. Whereas the European ontology is, like you mentioned earlier, a material basis. So everything is, if you can't see it, touch it, smell it, hear it, taste it, it's not real. It's not real. It's not there. And it doesn't mean anything. Not only does it mean, does it not mean anything, but because European psychology is hierarchical, if it's everything, there's no complementarity. So something has to be better than the other. White man above black man, you know, humans above animals, you know, different classes, you know, rich above poor. Everything has this kind of, you know, I'm better kind of orientation, and that's that, and that comes from their particular worldview.
You know what? When you say that, Tim Wise in his book White Like Me spoke to this. He spoke to this on a level, and also that book Tandega by Tandega. Learning to be white. She also spoke to this. That's I never thought about that. That's deep.
We need to take a station break. We're going to come back. I know we have a caller. Caller, stay with us. But we're going to take a break, our final break for the show, and we'll be back after these messages. All right. Thank you so much, everybody. We're back here, and we have a caller, Chantel from Kansas City, Missouri. You're on the air. Chantel, go ahead with your question or comment.
Okay. Well, obviously, I agree. I think a lot of the, like, anti-racist movement that has kind of been brought about is definitely in part of, like, a byproduct of coronavirus. And it makes me wonder, like, listening to your show, I find out something new every day, especially being very white. Like, I grew up in a white household with parents that were kind of low-key racist and made me question, like, what the hell's going on? How do I unlearn something that is borderline, like, ingrained into my DNA?
Dang.
Thank you so much for calling with that, Chantel.
You.
We're going to let Dr. Flood answer that, and we appreciate you for listening and calling.
Yeah, I don't know if that makes sense, but
I understand what you're saying.
So much a part of, like, literally everything in such a way I didn't even consider.
Yeah, Dr. Flood, you want to? Thank you, Chantel. We appreciate that, Dr. Flood.
Yes, that's an excellent question. Thank you for that, Chantel. So, one of the African Center theorists, Dr. Linda James Myers, in her work, it's not so black and white. She says that these behavioral traits run on a continuum, on a spectrum, where you could find some African cultures that are closer to what we would consider sort of the European cultural traits, and there you could also find some European cultures closer to the African spectrum. It is my belief that that some of the Europeans who are more sensitive and emotionally and effectively there may be on that spectrum closer to the African worldview. And that's great because that's a very harmonious, you know, kind of way to be. So to answer her question, if she even is considering that, then she's probably on that spectrum, on that wavelength of being a little bit closer to a more African worldview. The second would be, such as one of your previous guests, Ibrahim Kendi, states, yeah, I do think that European Americans should practice anti-racism, that they should try and pass legislation and disconnect structures and institutions that practice, you know, racism, white supremacy. At the same time, African people don't need to be anti-racist. African people need to coalesce and get group power. Group power in every single human relation. So they need to have their own businesses, their own structures, not to segregate, but just to have power on par with other cultural groups.
Dr. Flood, we have another caller, Vernon from Kansas City. You're on the air. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Yeah, I'd like to ask you a question. What do you think about mixed marriages?
Thank you so much, Vernon. We'll let Dr. Flood take that off it for you off air. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, mixed marriages it was a thing prior to European colonization and enslavement. There'll be a thing after the European world model ends. Now, in the current context of things, I think that it could be a problem. Well, not it could be. A lot of times, it is a problem to the product of that relationship. Living in a biracial world, depending on how they look, which in the American context. Is very stringent. If you don't look white, you're less than, you're black or you're other. So that could be a problem for the child. But I think if you get a culturally competent, therapist to help them work through what could be issues, in living in America as a biracial child, then you should be all right. Now, when it comes to the relationship between different races of people, most notably European and African, I think there's a certain level of cultural sensitivity that either the European man or woman needs to have with their significant other before they can engage in any kind of relationship with each other.
So, okay, I want you to speak to the pathologies that could develop by black kids that are put or thrusted into predominantly or all white environments?
Yeah, I mean, honestly speaking, it's the same things that we see with Africans in America, but just in a more concentrated form, because all of our institutions, all of our structures, they're all dominated by white people, and the product of that for Africans is a sort of psychological displacement, a sort of a no man's land, where we know to a certain, we know that we're black to other black people, but we don't want to be. So we're in a kind of a lost state.
In the sunken place?
Yeah, go ahead.
I say, are we in the sunken place?
Well, yeah, a lot of black people are in the sunken place, and they may not even know. They may be joking with their friends, talking about the sunken place, and they're in the sunken place themselves. But even more so with people who have grown up in their whole life totally surrounded by Europeans. If you don't have, again, a culturally competent foster parent, a guardian parent to kind of let you know that, hey, you are black, you are African, and your hair is maybe different, your nose is different, you may have more melanin, and teaching you about your history, your culture, and who you are, and how the world works, and how the world sees you, and how you need to move in order to protect yourself, it could be a lot of problems that come from that.
And for everyone who are listening, and if you've just tuned in, this is Ebony's Bones, and we are talking about African psychology, a pre-colonized mindset, with Dr. Mutor Flood, who is a professor of psychology. Go ahead, Professor Lowe.
I had a question, okay? I got another question. I know I've been throwing these out, but they're coming to me like hotcakes. So, speak to the idea or the mental capacity of somebody like Candace Owens, right? Somebody that's black, that's more than likely, she exhibits a characteristics of a person that has been thrusted into a predominantly or all white environment since they were young, based off of her ideologies. Can she be racist?
So then we have to go over what what is racism. And from the African-centered psychology perspective, racism has many different... We connect racism specifically to white supremacy because it's the dominant version. It's the functional one. It's the one that's working right now. So in that conception, black people cannot be racist. I mean, what black people can do is a lot of times they can be biased. You know, they could be prejudiced. They can be discriminatory against their own people. But racism denotes a system. It's structural, it's institutional, and what it does is it privileges one group and marginalizes the other group. So Candace Owens is displaying a lot of traits of somebody who has high levels of internalized racism, but can she be a racist in the African-centered psychology perspective? She cannot. She can only be somebody who is internalized racism and is and has her own challenges that she has to overcome.
All right, we have about 3-4 more minutes for the show. I mean, I feel like, gosh, it just went by really fast, but I want to let people know you can still get a question or a comment in here in our last couple of minutes. The number is 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534, and Ron Keel will take your call. Professor Lowe, you had...
I just wanted to, I was thinking about the caller, Chantel is her name, right?
Yes.
Yeah, she's going to end up being an ally when it's all said and done, because I was liking her enthusiasm. I don't know why I just went back to that, but I was going to ask about Candace Owens one more time, based off of what you just said as far as her internalizing racism and possibly the supremacy of white Americans. Wouldn't she be racist by just, like, pushing that out, like being a platform for that ideology? Wouldn't she be like a agent of white supremacy, i.e. a racist, based off of that?
Well, there's a distinction. So she can definitely be an agent of racism. In order for racism to work, especially when a minority, such as Europeans, control the majority, a lot of who they control and oppress have to work with the system, and they may even work for the system. As long as you are under a system of white supremacy, in some way, form, or fashion, you help out the system of white supremacy. All right, whether that's through the capitalist economic system, whether that's through the school system, whatever it is, all the structures and institutions work towards the benefit of Europeans. So you help out white supremacy. All right. Now, other people help out white supremacy, racism more than others. However, the group of people who are not benefiting from helping that dominant group can't be racist because they're not helping their own group. Because at its core, racism is about two groups, and one is oppressing the other group and getting special benefits. Well, if you're in the group that is not getting those benefits, and instead you're just helping the group who is getting benefits, you can't be racist in that kind of conception. You could be discriminatory. You can be biased against your own people. You can prejudge your own people. But racism denotes a group factor, a group power factor that black people just don't have in America at the current moment.
Dr. Flood, we have a caller, one last caller, Wesley from Kansas City, Kansas. You're on the air. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Yes, I want to know if he read Dr. Drop.
Dr. Chekhan said, yep. Yeah.
And you still have the same opinion that you're voicing now?
Some of his opinions, such as the two cradle theory, I have read them, and yes, Dr. Diop, is a brilliant man. I had a PhD in chemistry, physics, and some other fields as well. His theory, the two cradle theory, states that So that the first civilizations developed and evolved in the southern cradle, and they're more or less African. And because of where they evolved, go ahead, sir.
All right,
go ahead.
Okay, and Dr. Follett, I just want you to know we have about 30 seconds to wrap this portion up because I have a final question for you to just share information with folks. But thanks so much, Wesley, for calling. We'll let Dr. Follett
finish. Is there some way I can get in touch with someone over there after the broadcast?
Yes, you can. We'll share whatever contact info Dr. Flood wants to share over the air. Okay.
All right.
Thank you for listening and calling. Dr. Flood?
Yeah. So the two cradle theory states that there were two cradles of civilization. One is a southern one, which is located in Africa and has abundant amounts of resources. And because of those abundant amount of resources, the psychology of Africans evolved to have an abundance kind of mindset, whereas the northern cradle was a very harsh civilization and had a very limited resources, and because of that, Europeans evolved to deal with those environmental consequences.
Thank you so much for that. We appreciate it. We're going to need to have a part two or something because Professor Lowe is sitting here. He wanted to have more questions. But thank you so much. We've been talking with Dr. Mutor Flood, professor of psychology, about African psychology and a pre-colonized mindset. Really quickly, in about 10 seconds, is there any contact information that you can share, your Facebook following or any social media, that if folks are interested?
Yeah, I mean, you could always follow me on Facebook. It's, you know, my name, my first and last name. I also have an Instagram page. It's, I believe it's King Mew. I don't go on it very often. but mostly you could find me on Facebook. I'm also on Twitter as King Mew as well.
All right, and Mutor, it's in our page on KKFI.org under Ebony's Bones, but it's MU-TOR and Flood. All right, we got to scoot. Thank you so much, Dr. Flood. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
No problem. All right. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Stay tuned.
Bye-bye.
And everybody stay tuned for American Roots with Nick Spencer.